The 100 Years' War, the De Guesclin Period, the French Attack on Saint-Sever, Part 2. Now, in England, Edward III's ministers were counting on the expedition of John de Montfort and Edmund of Cambridge to draw off most of the French forces around the fortress. But the English had, as usual, underestimated the logistical difficulties. The admiral seemed to have been intending to commandeer the annual wine convoy to Gascony, which nominally left England with empty holds in early October, and called at St. Matthieu in Finster on the way. But the requisitioning officers appear to have encountered unexpected resistance from the shipmasters. Many of them had already had their ships requisitioned once that year for coastal defense. Many seemed to have sailed away while they could. Others accepted their advances and absconded. About 200 large ships were needed by the end of September. After 2 months of intensive requisitioning in every maritime county, the admiral's officers had managed to find 60. The long-awaited General Council met at Westminster on October 6, 1374, to consider the papal legate's proposals for a peace conference. Piero de Prat was present in the English capital in October and probably attended it. Its decisions were no doubt carefully prepared by the king's ministers. The upshot was that the English magnates agreed to negotiate with France at Bruges, but they also agreed to reappointment of John of Gaunt as Edward's chief negotiator. However, now they were not willing to agree to a general truce. Instead, there would be a local one on the march of Picardy to enable the representatives of both sides to reach Bruges without interference. The reservation must have dismayed the legates. It meant that the conference would take place against the background of fluctuating strategic situations. But both sides now had large-scale military enterprises afoot, which they were unwilling to abandon. At the end of November 1374, the French king gave his formal consent to proceed with the conference on these terms. Both sides were simply playing for time. The dense preliminaries, the negotiation of the truce, and the issue of safe conducts and procurations were not completed until well into 1375. Right up to the last minute, the French had doubts how serious the English really were. The opening of the conference eventually was fixed for March the 11th, 1375. As autumn turned into winter and the date of the conference approached, there was a palatable sense of frustration in both capitals. At Saint-Sever, the French commanders were making no progress. By October, Jean de Vienne had succeeded in persuading the king that he did not have enough troops for the job and that the bastides around the fortress were too small and perhaps too far away to contain the English garrison. Fresh troops began arriving during the second half of October, but the numbers still fell far short of what was required. The representatives of Lower Normandy had appeared before Jean de Vienne at Saint-Lô, the principal town of the Comtine, on October the 16th, in order to be bullied into authorizing the continued collection of 15,000 francs a month from the province until the end of December. Yet the end of December came, and the garrison of Saint-Sever, now in its fifth month of the siege, showed no signs of exhaustion. In January 1375, the French king sent a testy message to Jean de Vienne, ordering him to increase the pressure on the fortress and speed up the campaign. The king's council decided to increase the size of the army to 2,000 men in addition to the crowd of workmen employed on the siege works. A close siege was to be undertaken instead of the strategy of loose encirclement followed since the previous summer. A major deployment of gunpowder cannon was also planned in addition to more familiar mechanical stone throwers which were already in use. The king's great cannons, which were stored in the Louvre, were loaded on the barges, carried down the Seine, dragged across the rough roads of southern Normandy. An expert from Languedoc was hired to set up an iron foundry at Saint-Lô to build more of these crude ancestors of modern field artillery. One of them was designed to fire balls weighing 100 pounds, 45 kilograms. Two more foundries, one for iron and one for brass, were created at Caen to cast artillery pieces under the supervision of another specialized cannon master, who appears to have been an Italian. All of this cost the equivalent of a major campaign. The long-suffering estates of Lower Normandy met for a third time at Bayeux at the end of January 1375 to authorize another 2 months' worth of emergency taxes. Similar taxes were now extracted for the first time from the rest of Normandy north of the Seine. The king even loosened his own purse strings and allowed contributions to be made from central funds. In England, John de Montfort and his companions still had not left for Brittany. The winter weather may have contributed to the delay, but shortage of shipping was the main reason. By the end of the year, there were 115 ships in the harbor, barely half of what was required. Many of these only had skeleton crews on board. John de Montfort and the Earl of Cambridge, who had hung about London with their retinues while their transports were being found, finally left for Plymouth after Christmas, with orders to embark as many men as they could in whatever ships were available. Two senior knights, Guy Bryant and Ralph Ferrers, were instructed to hurry them on and take their musters as they embarked. The shipping situation improved in January with the return of the wine fleet from the Gironde and muscular recruitment by press gangs in ports around southern England. There were nearly 170 ships in Plymouth by the end of January, most of which had full crews. But now it was the turn of the troops to cause the delay. A month after the arrival of the leaders at Plymouth, stragglers from their retinues were still being turned out of London hostelries and packed off to join their companions. The Spencer's Company did not start arriving until several weeks later. Bored and idle men waiting on the coast took readily to cattle rustling and housebreaking. The delays greatly aggravated the government's serious financial problems because the men had to be paid for sitting around uselessly in London and the West Country. Some of the loans which the king's ministers had arranged in the autumn were already falling due. The government had no choice but to pay those who were secured and leave the rest to their creditors to go without. The garrison of Ireland was peremptorily informed that because of the great outpouring of money occasioned by the Breton campaign, their pay bills could not be met. At the beginning of March, there was an explosion of anger at Westminster. In a letter addressed to Guy Bryant and Ralph Ferrers, which has authentic ring of it, of Edward's drafting, the king expressed his astonishment at their slackness and threatened retribution if things did not improve. Similar letters went out to the commanders themselves. So, as usual, we have a nice plan, but the English have trouble executing it because they're short of money and they don't have enough ships. Of course, in France, they have a little bit more money, but they underestimate the situation, and so it costs them more money and more taxes, and they need more men. So both campaigns, one to land and help Brittany, and the other to take the castle of Saint-Sever, were somewhat financial disasters at this particular point. But we'll see what transpires as we move along. The plus side is, they have agreed to go to a truce, or shall we say, a peace treaty conference, and still be able to fight. Now the sources for this, The Hundred Years' War, The Chronicles by Froissart, The Hundred Years' War by Perrois, The Hundred Years' War by Nylans, and The Hundred Years' War, The House Divided, Volume 3 by Sumption. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.